When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Well, we got Oppenheimer coming out real soon here at the time of this recording, and Christopher Nolan is one of our favorite directors and screenwriters, so we thought, let's get into another one of his films, let's revisit one of his films, and The Prestige is one that came up, and it's been a while since we kind of did one of these where we just talked about an older movie, man.
Yeah, I mean, we promised the audience we were going to do this, and it took us a little bit of time. We're still finding our, I'm sorry, everyone. We're still kind of finding our legs a little bit. We're getting there. It's been after, like a half a year.
Well, we're still finding our legs even after 6-7 years of a podcast. I mean, we're still trying to figure out what this podcast even is.
Yeah, well, we've had a lot of iterations. But I think one of the core ones is to go and revisit. I don't know if this one qualifies as a classic. Although, goddamn, 2006. You know, that's a long time ago,
and yeah,
it just doesn't feel like it. But when you look on the, you know, that's like 17 years ago when this movie was made. And so Christopher Nolan likes to play with time, and for a good reason, because just for that very reason, which is the fact that, holy crap, you blink and 17 years have gone by.
I know. It's it's sad, really. I mean, this one, I remember, yeah. I didn't see this one in theaters, I know.
I was a young lad, and I remember The Prestige.
Seriously, like, I feel like I just saw this, and, like, that's why I haven't revisited it. But when I started watching it for the show, like, I was like, wow, I haven't seen this forever. Like, what's, like, I kind of knew eventually what happens, but at the same time I was like, how it gets there, I was like, what's happening? And it just shows the passage of time, man. It's a son of a bitch.
And I think that's this movie doesn't quite focus on that a little, although this is a completely non-linear narrative,
right?
I mean, because it bounces around quite a bit, and this is after Batman Begins.
Yep.
So he does Batman Begins, and then goes and makes this kind of really small indie film. And what's interesting about this is you get glimpses of the Nolan that was to be. But also there is a lot of restraint in this, particularly I noticed in the score. There's no booming Hans Zimmer.
Right.
It's very subtle, the score in this film. And so it is interesting to go back and really, as an exercise in what was our bread and butter, was to go back and look at these kinds of films. And so I think it's a perfect time to revisit The Prestige. I'm in the same boat as you. I have not seen this movie. If the movie is 17 years old, I probably haven't seen it in 16, 15 years, you know, since then. And I don't know really why, this movie, I think, in a lot of ways kind of exemplifies what we love to do here, which is to take that, to peel it back, take a look at something, and in particular for someone like Nolan, I mean, I would dare say we love everything he's done with the exception of Tenet. I refuse to be swayed on that movie. I think it's a bad movie, but
I wouldn't say it's bad.
Times have you seen it?
I saw it like 1.5 times.
So you tried to do a rewatch?
Well, yeah. Well, I did, just mainly because I watched YouTube videos explaining the movie to me. And I was like, oh, okay. All right. I don't know. Maybe it was just me convincing myself to like it, probably. But, you know, it was just, yeah, one of those. Yeah, I mean, it's definitely one of his weaker films. I'll, 100% give you that. But
There are threads in Tenet which run through all of his movies, which is what's real, what's not. of course, time we know is another one. Identity is a big one through this. I also feel like there's Hitchcock in this film. I got a little bit of tinges of vertigo in this in terms of obsession with things that may or may not be real.
Right. I guess with the themes. Yeah, I can see that. Yeah, it's
interesting to go back and really kind of watch Nolan, the indie filmmaker, kind of in this, because Batman Begins was a massive buy for Warner Brothers, and he goes and makes this kind of small movie, and so
because he's more of an because he was made Memento, and then what, Insomniac, is that the one he made?
And I think that because that one had Pacino, so that one was a little bit that one was certainly a step up, but I kind of like the way he, if you look at his career, because he did Batman Begins and then The Prestige and then The Dark Knight and then Inception, I think is the order there. He would kind of play with, I'm going to do your Warner Brothers comic book movie, which I think actually the Batman one was because he actually wanted to make it.
Right. Yeah.
But he would alternate between big comic book studio production to like something different. You know, he would explore an idea that he always had, and of course then we get Interstellar, which I just rewatched a couple days ago. Yeah. The movie is it gets better with every watch.
I love Interstellar, and
it's great because what it is essentially Nolan saying, I'm gonna remake 2001, but for a modern audience and with like a twist about with heart, essentially, is what the movie is, and to proclaim like that love, the idea that you can connect to someone. We're now going to quantify that feeling that we've all had in our lives, that love matters and the connection we have between each other matters.
Sometimes it's beyond science, there is a more distant thing connecting us, it feels, or is kind of the message, I would say. It's just like sometimes things are just beyond science, and it's just like unexplainable. And
but anyway, we're not talking about Interstellar, we've already done a review.
Oh, we're
on
not
it.
Okay.
I feel like I'm rabbit holing here. So we want to get right into The Prestige. My only problem with this movie is I'm not quite sure how to talk about it because the script is great. I mean, you watch this movie and you can see all the threads and the the pull, and there's some hints of what might be to come, and it's so tight and it keeps you engaged. But I don't know how to really talk about all these little nuances that happen on screen. For this review, so
very much. Yeah. Because it's a story. I mean, 100% about ego and. It's not a magic movie. I mean, that's what I took away from it this time. It's not a movie about magic. It's about power and again, ego and prestige in a different sense. Than it is about, magic. Where you start with it is where do you go? I mean, it's nonlinear. So, you got, it's starting at the end essentially, and then goes back, and then it goes back to the end again. Like it, is very Tarantino-esque, but Christopher Nolan-esque. I mean, Memento, obviously is a very time warped movie. You got Inception, things like that. So he likes to play with time. Tenet, even.
Every movie almost does. Every Nolan,
I know.
Other than the Batman movies, Dunkirk is a movie played out through time in three ways. This one doesn't quite do that, but it shows you it's very jumbled. Yeah, this is more like a Tarantino. Yes, this is more like a Pulp Fiction, I guess, narrative.
Do you find this hard to follow at all, or
no? I don't find it hard to follow. What I find challenging is what is the point of the movie? Because we begin the film with the Michael Caine, who is of course a Nolan staple.
Yep.
There's the three steps to the magic trick, right?
Right.
What is it?
Draw.
Or the pledge? Actually, no. Here it is. Yeah. The pledge: show something ordinary. The turn: do something extraordinary, like making an object disappear into thin air. And the prestige, which is to bring it back. we hear this a lot. And so what ultimately is the point of the film? And I was thinking, so much of this movie is about, there are magic tricks going on to the characters in the film. So Christian Bale, as we know, he's got a twin brother.
Right.
He's essentially living, it's not quite a double life. It's two people living half a life, I think is what.
Yeah, I mean, that's what it comes down to. But yeah. So physically, yeah, these two characters are, yeah, living, like, one guy's in love with one girl, another guy's in love with another, but they're living a life for their career. They're living a life like, no, we have to play to this illusion. Because, yeah, he has a twin brother, which we found out at the end, who is always disguised and, you know, is called Fallon. Is that his name?
Fallon. Yeah. And they're so committed to it where the Christian Bale character we know gets his finger shot off by Hugh Jackman, the double has to then commit and get his own fingers.
Right, yeah. Gets him chopped off, and yeah, it's brutal. But yeah, I mean, so yeah, like physically, yeah, I mean, they're committing to this career and like this is their life, and you know, this is what they've come down to, and they hint towards that when they show the like Asian guy who is very crippled and always pulls the you know, that fishbowl trick, you know, that they do.
It's a great trick.
But, you know, but he has to live his life showing that he walks that way because he's essentially holding the fishbowl in his legs. Whereas, yeah, Christian Bale now has to live his life like, I have, you know, this is my life, but we're twins, but our life is this. So it definitely speaks on, though, you know, that's the reality of this movie. That's on paper what this is, but I think it's speaking to people leading double lives and, you know, totally committing themselves to their career. They're this to their career and the masks we put on, you know, for different, you know, occasions and different, just scenarios. So, I mean, it speaks on that 100%.
We're all kind of deceiving one another in many ways. And sometimes it's intentional for a rise or whatever. This is a very heightened, you know, extreme example, but I think that's kind of what the movie was getting at.
Yeah. Well, cause you have Christian Bale's wife, Sarah, who, I love this touch because, you know, you initially hear the whole not today thing. Like he says, mm-hmm. I love you. And she says, not today. You know, when you're first watching this, it's like, well, oh, that's interesting. Not today. Like you're more focused on your career today. That's what you're focused on. And then he says, I love you, you know, a few scenes later. And she's like, oh, you mean that today? You know, so they keep playing with that, you know, and it's like, yeah, I mean, this movie plays with, you know, again, not even a double life. It's, you know, sometimes you're just more.
You're not really present.
You don't know how to prioritize. And yeah, you're not. Yeah, totally present. Exactly. Yeah.
And in this movie, it shows that the one that was present is your twin brother. But
right.
In reality, it would be something like, I'm checked out. I'm on my phone. I'm just not paying attention to you, kind of a thing. So you're getting a different version of me. That's not there for you, you know, present for you, which is interesting. That was really my big takeaway.
Yeah.
From the film.
Well, I was just gonna say, and then you know, I mean, from Hugh Jackman's character's standpoint, his was more seemingly about ego and revenge because you get his whole, he finds a double. He doesn't have a twin, so he finds a double to do his trick with the throwing the hat and disappearing and then coming back out the door and his double catches the hat. And then he realizes he's below the stage and he hears the applause, but he's not really getting that glory. It's the double that's getting the glory. So it's like, it's a huge thing with ego in this movie too. You know, it's
definitely you want. Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about the plot.
Yeah.
Here.
Yeah.
Which is and in broad strokes here, because again, the
yeah,
we'll watch the movie if you haven't seen it. But essentially, where we start is, Hugh Jackman and Christian Bale are assistants to a magician where mm-hmm. they're doing a what's it called? Underwater escape.
Yeah.
Call it
seems
that.
Like
yeah.
a Houdini type thing. Yeah. Where the girl gets tied up and in the water and then they put a cloak over it and she ends up out of the water in the end.
They quote unquote select two random men from the audience who happens to be them. They're on the crew. And they tie a certain kind of knot on the Christian Bale ties him around the wrist. Hugh Jackman ties him around the ankles and gives her a kiss every time because it was we don't know. We learned that's his wife. And there's some controversy around the kind of knot that Christian Bale is tying to make it easier for her to get out or not. And he's like, yeah, whatever. And she's like, no, it doesn't matter what it is. I'll get out. Well, there's one show where she doesn't get out. She drowns, dies. And Hugh Jackman blames Christian Bale for tying the more difficult knot. Now, I mean, that's interesting, but it also doesn't quite explain how we got here. In the movie, the script does such an amazing job. It's almost hard to describe if you're not watching it to build your anticipation to these moments. And the cinematography is amazing. And one thing I'll say. For a movie that takes place in the 1890s, something has happened recently over the last, I'll say, 5-10 years, where they'll put like a filter on the camera. It'll look yellow or gray or dingy.
Mm-hmm.
This movie just looks real to
right,
me.
Yeah.
They're wearing costumes and the set design is fantastic. It just looks normal. It looks mm-hmm. fine. There's no grittiness to the film when you're watching it. Did you catch the same thing? Did you notice that? It just felt regular.
I mean, now that you say that, it's like, okay, that totally, I'm noticing that now. Yeah, it's like, they don't make a effort to show that it's older other than the costumes and the production design, things like that. But
yeah, there's no camera like focusing on like what might have been a negative part of life, which might be like some slop in the street or whatever, anything like that. It's just that's not our focus. We're on character and on story, which I really appreciate for this film. But this is kind of the turning point between the characters, Did he tie the wrong knot on purpose, I guess? And we're going to assume the worst. This is kind of where the rivalry is born.
Yeah. I mean, because they had discussed the knot and everything. Like, I guess it makes it more believable if they tie a harder knot, you know, and makes it more like, you know, impressive to the audience, I guess, is why they wanted to do it, because it seemed like she agreed to it. Like, it seemed like
she's fine. She's like, I can get out of any knot, essentially, was what she said.
But then, I think Michael Caine said something about it being underwater, it expands or something, and you know, it's way harder to untie. So they kind of decide to do that, and the whole movie, Hugh Jackman's kind of like, what knot did you tie? Did you tie that knot? And like you said, that's when the rivalry starts, and that's when, you know, because Christian Bale is all about this catching the bullet trick. Catching the bullet. Yeah. And it's like, how are you not vetting these audience members better? First of all, I mean,
where are your security? But you have to remember, it's in the 20th or 19th century. Is it? 1890s, right?
Yeah, 1890s, yeah. 19th century. You got Hugh Jackman who shoots him in the hand, and cuz Fallon, who is, we find out later, is Christian Bale's twin, is, you know, stops him where he doesn't shoot him in the chest or head or anything. He shoots him in the hand. So that's when we get that. But there's also a big thing with the whole Tesla Edison rivalry in this too. Like, that's interesting.
There's so much there's so much in this movie, which I think is why it was so widely regarded for, because there's no fluff in this. If anything, there's more to it, which is, so the, what we kind of find out in the beginning, there's actually, let's take it back to the three things, the pledge, the turn, and the prestige. It kind of typically begins with a, like a bird in a cage, right? Well, what we, the audience finds out is that they smash the bird in a collapsible cage and bring a new one out. And that's a big foreshadowing hint to what's to come, but also just a shock, right? It's not just like, it's not just as an illusion. I've deceived you. I've deceived you in a way that you would never, you would never accept if you knew the truth. And that's one thing that they come up with too, is like, the audience kind of knows that there's something wrong, but they don't really want to know what it might take to get this trick done. They just kind of want to be entertained.
Well, yeah, which I thought was, I mean, interesting. Even, you know, the audience of watching this movie is, you know, it's like, yeah, like what, how do you really do that without killing the bird? And essentially you do kill the bird, like
smash it to hell.
It's all about the trick. It's like you sacrifice these things, just it's all about the illusion.
But they wouldn't do that, right? I mean, you wouldn't really kill a bird just to make me, just for my 5 cents, right?
Yeah, like no way. And but like the kid in the beginning spots it right away, like when the new bird comes out, like he's like, no, where's his brother, you know, like where, what, yeah, what's happening.
I think on a first watch, you would never catch that they're telling you what's actually going to happen. Later.
Right. Yeah. There's so much foreshadowing in this yeah. movie. It's crazy. Like it's,
you wouldn't believe it.
It's almost rubbing you in the face with it. Like it's like, it's like, oh yeah. I mean, it's so obvious at this point. But yeah,
The way they sabotage one another through their tricks, because one would do a thing and then the other one would show up in the crowd, as you said,
right,
the vetting. And just blow up the trick. And all those are amazing scenes, because there's the element of the crowd in there. Because I think Christian Bale's doing a thing with, like, there's one where he's doing a thing with a trick with the rings. It's like, it's a solid ring. And
yeah,
I can put them together. I love the crowd's like, boo.
Yeah.
Like,
boo. Put yeah. rings together. Wow.
So the humiliation for a failure is quite high.
Yeah.
And so when one can kill it, that's quite damaging to like word of mouth and getting other people to come. So I love that. And so, but the point is they're one-upping each other to the point where they're looking for something more. And they yeah. come upon Tesla played by David Bowie.
David Bowie. Yep. They come upon Tesla. Well, what do you think of David Bowie in the, as Tesla? Is this good casting?
I think he's great. The role,
yeah,
honestly did, because it's weird the way David Bowie will just like show up in films is to play a minor role, and I think he's quite a good actor.
Yeah,
my issue is this technology kind of demands a big suspension of disbelief for the audience to get where we go.
Yeah.
What yeah. are your thoughts on that?
I yeah, definitely agree with that. It's way more futuristic than you would think. What I think Christopher Nolan was doing, and Jonathan Nolan, he is a co-writer on this, who did Westworld. I think he was definitely trying to push the whole Edison versus Tesla thing without being too obvious. Like Tesla was way more ahead of what everyone thought, and but Edison got all the credit, you know, yeah. type of thing.
That rivalry, yeah, they definitely hit on that, because it was competing about, I think, alternating current versus direct current and all,
right,
stuff, yeah. which I don't understand, but I just know I could regurgitate.
Yeah, I guess for me it just makes sense for the movie. It's, you know, science, but and they kept mentioning he was a real wizard, and it just kind of for me worked because it's a movie about quote unquote magic, and you know, he's essentially doing these things which we know are impossible, you know, like
right. Yeah. So you're saying like that the thing between there's a quote and I don't have it exactly right, but the difference between science and magic is they're indistinguishable or something along those lines.
Yeah.
So like in other words, when someone has never seen an airplane, sees that looks like magic to them.
Right. Well,
so they don't know how to describe it. So and essentially that's kind of what like these illusions are, which is they're actually grounded in reality. They may be upsetting to what they are or what it is, but there is no magic. Magic does not exist.
Yeah.
Right. And so well,
yeah, because then. I was no, I'm sorry. Yeah, if
you, no, there you go.
I was just thinking, yeah, like when I was watching this movie, I was like thinking, like, okay, that I think that's what they're doing here. Like, if we went back in time right now with our smartphones, like, and showed somebody, look at this, and they'd be like, whoa, sorcery, you know, like,
yes,
or even
yes,
a TV,
exactly.
Like, you know, it's just insane, you know, just what is possible, like what man made possible, you know, with just time. So it's like, yes. Even like in 100 years from now, like, are is there things that we're gonna be like, oh my god, like what what is this sorcery? Like yeah, it seems like sorcery, it seems like magic, but really it's just the advancement of science, the advancement of humans being able to figure this stuff out. And you know, it's so yeah, I think this movie definitely speaks on that too, you know. Just
yeah, and I found the quote. This is from Arthur C. Clarke, who wrote the 2001 novel. Any sufficiently advanced technology is indistinguishable from magic. Let's actually talk, since you mentioned it, let's talk about the cast a little bit. Well, Bale's amazing, Jackman's amazing,
yeah.
Scarlett Johansson, oh man, she's
Wawa Wiwa.
Well, not just Wawa Wiwa plus just phenomenal acting on her part. Of because who is she's because she's kind of a rogue, she's kind of playing both sides, but she has integrity as a side piece.
Yeah, no, right? Yeah, as the mistress.
I kind of respect the game a little bit, you know, from her yeah. perspective. It's like because she's constantly saying like, don't tell me about the family, when you're with me, you're with me, and I was like, whoa. Well, that like that's what a side piece would tell you,
right? Yeah. Well, and that's there's so much intricacies with the whole, again, the Christian Bale thing. Like again, like Sarah Rebecca Hall's character, like saying, you know, not today, you know, she doesn't. And then that whole scene with them two fighting, and obviously it's the other twin who's in love with Scarlett Johansson, but. You know, he's got to play the part that he's, you know, in love with her. And she asks him, you know, do you love me? And he said, not today. Like that to me was just like, wow. Like, wow. Yeah. Like that, just bringing it all together. Like, cause again, like Nolan keeps hinting at it and, you know, all this. And he just said, not today, you know? So, and that, I guess that speaks to, you know, obviously those two were just, you know, they were just so in on the act, you know, so in on this career of theirs that they were so in on the illusion of being greater than they were that obviously they were telling each other, like, you know, she keeps saying, not today, you don't love me, and, you know, and vice versa. Like they weren't, they were obviously telling each other everything.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just, yeah.
This is that kind of final trick, which is what they call the transported man.
Right. So, yeah.
And so let's kind of try. This movie is so visual, and so to describe it is weird, but essentially the trick is to have two doors where, and I think the Christian Bale, he bounces a rubber ball into one door, gets it, and then it appears into the other door, right?
Yeah.
I don't have that right.
And Hugh Jackman's obsessed with finding out how is he doing this, you know, like what's, and Michael Caine's just like, it's a double.
He's a perfect actor for telling the audience and the characters the truth,
right? And he always sides with the good, you know. It seems like, anyway, like he always sides with the right character, you know.
Hugh Jackman character tries to replicate it and do it his own way. He finds his own double. He does it in a much more showy way, because one of the things that they talk about in the movie is that he's much more of a showman. Hey, oh, the greatest showman. I gotta say, I knew what was going on. Obviously, I knew the trick.
Right.
But when this was actually done on film, as in the way it was shot, I cheered. I jumped up and I said, holy shit, this is awesome. And I knew what the trick was.
Yeah. Yeah. It was awesome. Yeah. It was just awesome. Like, wow, this is amazing. Like, yeah. How do they do it? Like, yeah, that was
just for the timing and the choreography. Yeah. And like to just show me something that, you know, just to watch.
Because when they were like off timing, like after Christian Bale had talked to the double a little bit, but you know, they were like the hat was thrown and fell on the ground, and then he came out and was like, oh, I missed it, you know, and you know, still was, you know, made it a show, you know, made it entertaining for the crowd and everything.
So Hugh Jackman is N-gear and Christian Bale is Borden. Borden's behind bars through most of the movie for the murder, which was essentially a setup. Do you believe this technology that Tesla has, which is, I think I've seen it referred to as clones, but I would more refer to it as a replicator.
Yeah, definitely replicator, because again, it's interesting at the end when Hugh Jackman says, like, I never knew if I was going to be the one drowning or the one coming back, you know, type of thing. Like,
the challenge is to believe that this thing is even possible for me.
Yeah. Well, I liked how they hinted towards it with the hats and then how he finds out with the cat and everything. I mean, to me, I mean, again, in 100 years, I could be proven wrong. Yeah. I mean, to me, that's where the magic and the suspension of disbelief comes in for this movie. Like, I don't see how that could ever be possible. I mean,
so in order to perform this trick, the person on stage must die. They have to fall through a trap door and drown so that the other person can appear far off and show up and be the showman. Right. And so but my memory is that they did this many, many times, but you don't really see that on the film or in the film. You only see it, I think, once. So they must have performed this trick, this illusion. How many Hugh Jackmans have been killed and replicated, right, throughout this process?
The whole, you know, the tanks of Hugh Jackmans at the end. But I mean, yeah, I mean, it kind of what you were saying, like he kept saying, like, you know, the man in the box doesn't get recognized or something, you know, something like that.
Yeah,
like the man in the box doesn't get recognized. And then, you know, the one,
because that was something that Christian Bale, Borden, they overcame.
Yeah.
They didn't care about the credit.
Yeah.
And that was something that ate up the Hugh Jackman N-gear character about not getting the credit. There was something much different. It was almost like the Bale characters, the two of them, were okay. Or I think it says this at the end. We were okay with the life we were living.
Yeah, they were okay with sharing the glory. And sometimes I would get it, sometimes you would, you know, he would get it, you know, and they would switch off. Whereas the Hugh Jackman character never knew when he was going to get the credit. So he kept falling in and didn't know if he was going to die or be the one to get the glory. And I think that's a big thing, you know, from
so this. What's left of the person, right? Because you're replicated, and we assume you. What do we assume is created?
Right, I know. Like, I mean, obviously, you have the same memories and the same everything. I mean, it's just, you're just create. I don't know. It's it's hard to like, say. Like it's yeah.
How do you live with it? Like how do you think about yourself, or do you just think of yourself as the same? I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know, man. Yeah, it's definitely one of those questions for sure, because it's like, yeah, how you know people are, you're essentially dying. You're like, you keep killing yourself over and over for this. Like, how many times are you going to kill yourself just for glory, just for whatever it is you're searching for? Like, yeah, I mean, this... Again, there's so many metaphors I'm sure you can, you know, figure out for this. But yeah, it's like, how many times are you going to kill your inner person just to get a level up? Nothing's ever enough, I guess, is the thing. Like, nothing is ever enough.
Yeah, like, when does it end?
Right. Yeah. It's just like...
You do it forever?
Right.
So, what's... And I feel like the movie hits on like a bunch of things, but it doesn't quite, I think it hints at the idea that the end product is not real. It's like a copy of a copy of a copy.
Right.
And so something must be lost there.
Right.
I think, wouldn't you think so?
You kill a part of yourself every time you are in, I don't know. Like, I'm trying to say this in a way like, because obviously it's good to be ambitious. It's good to, you know, strive for things. But at a point, the goal, the end point you want, you kind of have to kill yourself, a part of yourself, to get there. You know, I think that's a big...
So if you think of like a Bill Gates or an Elon Musk or someone, like, is that what you're trying to say?
Yeah.
To achieve, to be that person, or Mark Zuckerberg,
yeah,
whoever they are.
You have to kill a part of yourself. I mean, even to get into power with politicians and everything, like they 100% are just saying the things they need to say to get elected or chosen or whatever you want to call it. Like, what they truly believe, like they have to cut off a part of what they truly believe, you know, because they're trying to get these votes and all that. So I guess that's what I kind of equate this to, and kind of a, I guess that's the metaphor for what these characters are doing. I guess that's
so
what
you have
I'm
to
trying to say.
You have to accept slicing off a bit of your humanity to
right.
achieve
yeah.
the goal that you want.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. yeah.
I'd agree with that. And now in this movie, there is a one up, which is Hugh Jackman. He thinks he gets away with it, but in a way, but he doesn't quite, because the Borden twin brother, which I guess, as you said, was obvious to everyone, well, not to everyone, but to at least Michael Caine, he shoots him, kills him. And it's explained to us that they were kind of okay with the situation, and you're not, and you're gonna die. And so I guess as the one twin brother dies, it's not as much of a tragedy, I guess.
Yeah, because it's like you still have the other Christian Bale character. Like, what? No, yeah, it's weird. Yeah, because it's like,
it's very weird.
Like, what? Well, yeah, like, are you supposed to be? Because he gets hung, you know, or hanged. Actually, I think is the
hanged.
You would think
hanged.
It would be hung, but yeah, it's actually hanged. He gets hanged, and it's it's bittersweet, because again, like, you think. I mean, obviously, both of them had a relationship with the daughter. I mean, they both probably, you know, loved her and, you know, wanted, you know, the best for her. But she only had one true father, which I think is the one that ended up with her in the end. But yeah, it's a torn feeling, you know. I mean, because, you know, you get Hugh Jackman's revenge, like, because his wife died because Christian Bale tied the wrong knot. But then at the same time, like, he's like, I don't care about my, I don't care. Yeah, because he, yeah, I guess that's true. I think, yeah, Hugh Jackman is the bad guy in this movie. Yeah, that's, I think that's the case. I don't think Christian Bale's the bad guy in this movie.
He is a bad guy, but he's not the baddest
guy.
He's
not the bad guy, yeah. Because, I mean, it's, yeah, it ends where you're like, okay, I'm glad that he at least got to be with his daughter and, you know, keep this in because my son, his mind amazes me. He saw us talking with microphones and now he just brought out a microphone because he was like, oh, I want to be like daddy. Look, Beck. Look.
Well, has he seen the movie?
Like I gave him this microphone because he always wants to play with it. Yeah, he saw the movie. He was watching some of it. But yeah, he's like, obviously he knew we were talking with microphones. He's nonverbal and it was just like, okay, I'll talk with the microphone too. Anyway, I mean, he's just putting it up to his mouth and stuff, but you know, it's
that's awesome. You know what that tells me? That means you need to go, you need to, a fuller commitment. Oh, I see him.
Yeah.
What a great kid.
Yeah. It's just like, oh, you're talking to microphone? I'll talk to microphone.
What a dynamite kid.
Oh, my God.
That's awesome. That's full love for my dad.
Yeah. So, yeah, I had to. but yeah, I mean, this movie, I mean, yeah, there's just so much to.
It's one of the most difficult movies to talk about I think we've ever done. Because. Well, the script is amazing, but without the visuals, it's so hard to describe. And so I think we did our level best.
It's, yeah, a fantastic film. Again, Hugh Jackman and Christian Bale are amazing actors. Even Michael Caine in this movie. Like, he's almost a lead in this movie. Especially, I guess, in the first half, it seems like he's more of a lead. Because they had him give that little dialogue at the beginning, which is essentially the same at the end, but yeah, it's just like a soothing thing to have at the beginning of your movie and the end of your movie is Michael Caine saying, yeah, you got the prestige to draw.
And that's what made me think, you know, analogy. I'm always thinking of the analogy to my life.
Yeah.
And that's what made me think of, okay, so what's the prestige in my life? What's the illusion that I'm playing throughout as I go through every single day, the people that I interact with, and in some ways it is, I'm pulling a rabbit out of my hat, you know, to people, try to in some way, because a lot of our interactions are not completely honest. I mean, most of them are not.
We have to, yeah. We yeah, yeah. In this life, this world, you have to do some sort of illusion. You're never showing your true self, just as Christian Bale in this movie. Like, you're never, I mean, hopefully to the people you're closest with you are, but you know, it's in the outside world, you're full of illusions. You're putting on this mask. It's sad in a way, you know, that we just can't all just be, you know, just honest and just be ourselves. But, you know, it's just a lot of it is just us. You're selling things. And I guess that's what magicians do. They're selling themselves. And you have to be a performer. Some people are better at selling because they're better for performers. Just like Hugh Jackman's character was a better performer, but might not have been as good a magician as Christian Bale's character, you know? So it's like,
It's not even, in a lot of ways, it's not even about the trick. It's the way you sell it, right? It's just most of life.
That's how I sold myself, you know, to my wife, you know? That's how she married me. I just, faked it till I made it, you know?
That's what we're all doing, buddy.
Hey, 14 years later, you know, I'm still going strong. So, you know, what are you going to do? But yeah, I mean, Christopher Nolan, man, again, with the exception of Tenet, I'll give you that. Like, he doesn't miss. Again, I'm worried about the box office with Oppenheimer. Like, you know, I guess worried as in, I mean, Christopher Nolan will be fine.
It's not our money.
Right. Well,
yeah. We're not the studio.
Exactly. But
so who cares?
Yeah. I guess I just want more people. I mean, I guess he's a mainstream guy. I was going to say I want more people to like him. And like, it's not like he's like this indie filmmaker or anything, but you know what I mean. Like, he's just, but all right. Prestige, Christopher Nolan, Oppenheimer. I can't wait to
give
see
it a rating.
Yeah.
In terms of
first.
Stars and yeah. quality and buckets of popcorn.
Yeah. Stars are our quality, buckets of popcorn are our entertainment value. This is a 4-star film. 100%, 4 out of 5 stars. Buckets of popcorn, I'd give it 3 buckets of popcorn. So 4 stars, 3 buckets of popcorn. It keeps you engaged the whole way through. I mean, it's not like action packed or anything like that. It's a thriller, psychological thriller type thing.
Yeah.
So 3 buckets of popcorn, 4 stars.
Yeah, 4 stars, I agree. I'm going to go 2 buckets of popcorn because in the first act, I'm thoroughly engaged. I wanted the dropping hints and I know they're dropping hints, so I'm eating them up as they're going. But until we kind of get to the resolution, I'm waiting for it, and I'm not, it's not to say that I'm getting bored, but I'm like, okay, I just want to know now.
Right. Yeah. It's like, well, yeah, because I remember kept looking at the, like, how much time was left. I was like, less than 15 minutes, and they still haven't revealed how Hugh Jackman's doing his trick. Like, yeah, yeah. It was so, like, wow. Like, you know, okay, buddy, we're going night night.
And also, my own memory was a pile of Hugh Jackman bodies. I don't know why I felt that way.
Okay. Yeah.
I was expecting that because
you're probably
that's
mixing
kinda
it with the hats and the yeah. cats. And
that's
because
that's the reality of what it would be, right? There'd be endless dead Hugh Jackmans throughout the trick.
Yeah.
Well,
and I like the touch of them having a blind man, like, putting the bodies
so
away.
He can't
like,
see. Yeah,
he's
yeah,
like, I don't know what
too.
I'm doing. Okay, just put these boxes, you know, where you tell me to put them. Like,
yeah, you know. And that's just one of many nice touches.
Yeah.
100%. And so I'm going to go 4 stars and 2 buckets of popcorn. The Prestige it's a pretty incredible movie and unique. So unique in a way that it's not, if you've never seen this movie, this is not like anything you've probably ever seen.
Well, Dave, I have a kid who wants to go to bed, so let's wrap this up. Follow us on Instagram, @BlockbusterMentality, Twitter, @BlockbusterCast, BlockbusterMentality.com. I know, Beckett, we're leaving, dude. Dave, @Dave_Quist on Twitter. I'm @BCCord on Twitter, again, @BlockbusterCast on Twitter. Find out all our episodes. We're going to have a review of Oppenheimer. We're going to have reviews, all that. Again, I don't know when we're releasing this episode even, but any final thoughts, Dave?
No, just go watch everything Christopher Nolan has ever made.
Yeah, have you guys ever heard of him? But say bye-bye. Say bye-bye.
Mama.
Bye-bye. All right, folks. Well, that is it for us. For Dave, I'm Ben. Well, for Dave and Beckett, I'm Ben. And as always, grab some popcorn, grab some snacks. We'll catch you guys
at the movie.